Welcome back to our final segment of the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Vice Admiral Adam Robinson, Surgeon General of the U.S. Navy. Also joining us on our conversation from IBM is Tom Romeo. Admiral, as we've discussed this morning, prompt and comprehensive medical treatment is a priority for service members suffering from an illness or an injury. Now, the National Naval Medical Center is the facility that has treated most returning casualties. As such, what are some of the critical lessons learned from NNMC, which has led to improvements and enhancements to Navy medicine's continuum of care?
The first is that we have to have a comprehensive care model, as I've already discussed, but that is absolutely crucial to the success in the future. You cannot segment care, and you cannot in any way make care piecemeal. It has to be comprehensive, and it has to include the physical, the emotional, the mental, and the spiritual well-being of the patient, and this is critical, and the family. The family has to be included in that model. We have now developed a system whereby we have in-route care, which is about as good as you can get, considering that we can bring critically injured people from the battlefield to our medical center within virtually hours of wounding. And we have also developed a system where we will have our families who usually get there either simultaneously with the patient, very often a few hours before the patient, and we have to make sure that we care for them and care for their needs because they have become an integral part of the healing of that patient. I think that in addition to that, there is a concept of care that Navy medicine has, which is patient and family centered. Again, I've mentioned this. This is not a slogan. This is a reality in terms of how we think about patients. We make sure that we bring all of our medical assets to the patient and to the family. We do not allow them to go out and search for those things. The onus of responsibility in care is on our shoulders, and we, in fact, take that very, very seriously. It is important to make sure that we coordinate care for patients and for families, and we don't allow them to do that because that is not their responsibility. Their responsibility is to help in the healing process, not to coordinate their care. I think that we've learned both of those things from our recent conflict, and I, as commander at National Naval Medical Center, lived what I'm telling you for the last 3 years.
Admiral, would you tell us more about the key recommendations outlined in the President's Commission on the Care for America's Returning Wounded Warriors?
The key recommendations, I think that there are approximately six of them. And the key recommendations are going to be summed up in this regard. The first thing is that we have to have a comprehensive look at care and what we're doing for patients. We have to make sure that we take care of families. We have to make sure that we can deliver the care that patients need regarding the injuries that they are receiving. We have to make sure that we have both an acute model of care, which the military service does well, but we have to lash that up with the systematic rehabilitative model that the Department of Veterans Affairs also does. We have to make sure that we take care of patients in the immediate, but we also take care of them with the future in mind, and that we, no matter what care or what circumstances of care and treatment that we start, that we not only finish that care, but that it becomes a sustaining care model for the future. Now, the six recommendations that were made are very specific recommendations. What I just told you are my interpretations coming out of those recommendations. That's what I think that the Presidential Commission was trying to get at, and I think that, in fact, we in Navy medicine have taken that to heart. I actually think that the military health system, Army, Navy, and Air Force Medical, have taken that to heart and are trying to provide that. Speaking for Navy medicine, I can assure you that we take this very seriously and that we are trying, in fact, to do what Secretary Gates has told us that we have to do, and that is there is no higher priority after the war itself than to take care of those men and women who have been wounded.
Certainly in the programs and initiatives you discussed today, a lot of that comes through. So it sounds like you're well on your way to meeting those recommendations. Admiral, I understand that you were a recent Banneker Institute Legacy Award winner. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And could you tell us a little bit about the award and what the mission and vision of the Benjamin Banneker Institute is?
The mission and the vision of Banneker Institute is to shine the light on the African-American community and ostensibly on the minority community, and that is Asian-Americans, Indian-Americans, no matter what minority we are talking about. But to actually look at science, technology, engineering, and mathematics and making that a reality in the lives of African-American children in the district and actually in the country, who we must have in order to fulfill our goals of making a society that is completely ready to take on the work of the future. From an academic point of view, there are many individuals in today's world that say, well, I think that I'd love to have an African American to come and work or to come and do this or to become involved from a professional point of view here, but I can't find any. The Benjamin Banneker Institute and the award I received is simply a way of recognizing that there are not only individuals, but there are individuals committed to the success of minorities in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And I have to give you one more segment here. Freeman Hrabowski, the president of University of Maryland Baltimore campus, an African American, has, in fact, one of the greatest science, technology, engineering, and mathematics programs that I've ever seen. I was there with him last week and his students. And for those who want to know if there are African American students who are capable or who are there, please go by and talk to Dr. Hrabowski and go by University of Maryland Baltimore campus. He will show you multiple scores of young African Americans who are in his engineering programs, in his PhD programs, in his PhD postdoctoral programs in physical chemistry, physics, computer science, in any facet of science and technology, they are there. And I think that he can show you firsthand that we can make the goal if we have real interest in trying to do that. Banneker is a way of showing, of trying to make sure that that interest goes down to the elementary, the junior high, the senior high level, and certainly we in Navy Medicine and we in Navy are very committed to African Americans in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
That's fantastic. I know the STEM disciplines are vitally important to our nation. Admiral, I'd like to transition now to the future. Now, what are some of the major opportunities and challenges the Navy Medicine may encounter in the future, and how do you envision your office will need to evolve over the next couple of years to meet those challenges?
That's really a wonderful question. I've sat all day, believe it or not, before I got here. I shouldn't say all day, but for the last several weeks, talking about future of Navy medicine and what where do we need to be? I think that there are a number of areas that we need to be. First of all, in terms of medical research, we certainly have to be involved in that, infectious diseases, emerging infections, but also the research of military platforms, of military treatments, of quality, of what is medical quality and how do you define it and how do you prove that you have actually gotten. And the other point is humanitarian assistance and disaster relief. We're not at the beginning of it, but we're at the beginning of a strategic imperative by the entire Navy that has now incorporated that. And we need to have a methodology that not only shows what we do, but the effect of what we do. So the question is, how do you know that this humanitarian assistance or this disaster relief operation was effective? We have polls now between countries. We liked the United States before, or we didn't, and then after the humanitarian assistance mission, we really liked them. But the key is there are other more precise mechanisms that we need to develop. I think that we need to look at the medical infrastructure across the military health system, and we need to come to some conclusions as to how we're going to keep that strong and vibrant, particularly in the time of all-volunteer force. And I think we can do that, but I also think that we need to make sure we have the proper incentives, both from a monetary point of view and also from an educational and a career point of view, to make sure that we have a commitment to that. We need to make sure that America understands that the difference between military and non-military, in very many respects, I didn't say military medicine, I said military and non-military, is simply the word service. Those of us in military have decided that we love the people that we're with, but we also are in love with the concept of service. We need to make sure that the American people realize that the strength of the nation is only the strength of all of the individuals that make up that nation, and that service is a way of giving back to the country a small fraction of what we have gotten from our great country. And we need to incorporate that in the future in how we, in fact, do our manpower and how we attract personnel to our Navy. And I think that that's something that we need to continually think about.
Well, and on that note, Admiral, what advice would you give to a person who perhaps is out there thinking about a career in either medicine or public service, or perhaps ideally both?
I think that one of the things that, as I said, the service aspects are just tremendous. The collegiality and the people that you'll meet in the service are absolutely second to none. I have been very fortunate in my career to have received my education. And I tell people this, and it's sort of funny. I have gotten nothing I asked for when I asked for it, but I've gotten everything I've asked for. So, and I think in very many respects, the orders that I wanted to a different location or the orders or the commitment that I wanted for postgraduate education, none of it came when I wanted it, but it all came. I got every bit of it done. And I think that that is the way the Navy and the military works. It's a fulfilling life. It's a life that is very exciting, and it's not duplicatable anywhere but in the military. In other words, I can't go to the civilian sector and duplicate the life. And it's very exhilarating, and it's something that I certainly would do over again. After 31 years, I've enjoyed every day, and I would do it again if I could.
That's fantastic, and just a wonderful perspective. Thank you. Unfortunately, we have run out of time. I want to thank you for fitting us into your busy schedule. But more importantly, Tom and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to our country and to our men and women in uniform, both as an officer and as a surgeon.
Tom, thank you so much for having me here today. To be here as the representative of Navy Medicine is quite an honor. The men and women of Navy Medicine do a tremendous job day in and day out. The professionals that we have kept in mind that we need three things in order to be great. We need to be professionally competent. We need to be personally committed to making sure that we take care of ourselves and our families. And we need to be spiritually active to know that we, in fact, are not the only ones that this is about, that we're only small parts of this, that it's about someone else and someone much greater than we are. That is what I think that military service and Navy medicine has taught me, and that's what I think that I'd like to share with everyone in the audience today and actually everyone that ever comes around me.
That's great. Thank you, Admiral.
Thank you.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Admiral Adam Robinson, Surgeon General of the U.S. Navy and Chief of the Navy Bureau of Medicine and Surgery. My co-host has been Tom Romeo, IBM's General Government Industry Leader. As you enjoy the rest of your day, please take time to remember the men and women of our armed and civil services abroad who may not be able to hear this morning's show on how we're improving their government, but who deserve our unconditional respect and support. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Albert Morales. Thank you for listening.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to join us every Saturday at 9 a.m. and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.